Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcast by me, veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Periodically, I read a newsletter called Bottom Line Secrets, and in a recent edition, there was an article about catching mice. Mice have become an increasing problem in households across the country thanks to the destruction of the habitat of their natural predators. As the number of predators who prey on mice has decreased, the number of mice increased. And so the article explored ways to catch mice. The first of these was the old snap trap that most of us are familiar with. It's slightly more sophisticated than in the old days, and also the bait has changed. When I was a kid, cheese was a standard bait for mice. Today's mice prefer peanut butter, and if you're really trying to attract them, add a sliver of almond and a few drops of vanilla extract. The second recommended type of trap is a live trap. This is for people who don't want to kill the mice. When they catch the mice, they take the mice somewhere else and turn them loose. The benefit of this trap is that the person can pretend that they were not personally responsible for the death of the mouse. However, logic and knowledge of mouse behavior makes it clear that the survival time of house mice taken out of their territory and moved somewhere else is not going to be very great. But for those who would prefer that the mice die away from their home, this is an option. Another option, poisons, are tricky. Aside from the fact that they contaminate the environment and that they can poison animals other than mice, including humans and pets, rodents are becoming increasingly resistant to them. Consequently, the poisons have become stronger and more deadly as time has gone on. The final option, called glue boards, only a sadist would even consider. They're just boards covered with glue. The mouse sticks to them and slowly starves to death, or if the person finds the mouse stuck to the board, then hopefully they'll put the poor creature out of misery. What I found interesting about this list was that there were two very safe, very effective, and non-toxic options that weren't described. One of them was the cat, and the other was the dog, particularly the smaller terrier breeds like the Rat Terrier and the Jack Russell Terrier, and the other small terriers who have been bred for hundreds of years to catch vermin of one sort or another. And that got me thinking, why wasn't this mentioned? I could say, well, it's because the author of the article was an exterminator. Consequently, he would be interested in promoting the products that he uses. But it also seemed to me that a lot of people don't like to think of their pets as predators. And yet, in terms of environmental soundness, I mean, what could be more environmentally sound than a cat? The cat and the mouse have evolved together for hundreds, if not thousands, of years as a predator-prey partnership. You don't have to worry about the cat being toxic. I have no problem with Bam curling up at the foot of my bed. On the other hand, there's no way I would ever have even a sealed bottle or can or package of rodenticide on my bed or anywhere near my bed or even in my bedroom. In addition to being environmentally sound, we don't have to worry about mice becoming resistant to cats. Because in their predatory dance, as the mouse improves, the cat improves. And as the cat improves, the mouse improves. And so they keep changing so that both populations are stable and both populations are controlled. So why do we have problems with this? The cat evolved to successfully hunt mice. put cats who have never seen a mouse with a mouse, and 50% of those cats will start to hunt. Take the remaining 50% and put those cats with another cat who's hunting, particularly a nursing queen with kittens, and 90% of those cats will learn to hunt. So we have a behavior in cats that they can successfully learn two ways, one innately, the other by experience. It's integral to the cat's behavior. And yet, we would buy poisons. Poison our environment. They have the potential to poison wildlife, both good and bad, as well as our pets and our kids. Because we don't want to believe that our companion animals could kill another animal. It's not part of the symbolism that we've imposed on them. I'm not sure what it says about us and about our relationship with these animals. Is it good? Is it bad? I don't know. Maybe it's not a question of good or bad. Maybe it's just a question of what is. Obviously, if the belief structure didn't work for us, we wouldn't use it. But it's nice to think about these things, even if it makes us uncomfortable, because it makes us realize that some of the things that we take so for granted and that seem so right when viewed through the lens of our limited experience might not be so right in a bigger scheme of things. So think of that the next time you see those cats or those Jack Russells or those rat terriers stalking something. Think about how you feel about that. Do you see villains? Or do you see partners? Partners in a greater scheme of things that we're only beginning to understand. It's a choice. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go watch my cat.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.